Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Albert, before we get into the woeful Browns, I saw the news before that one of your guys, Robert Klemko, going to the Washington Post. I saw you congratulate him. We did on the air as well. He's a great writer.
Yeah. It's a fantastic opportunity for Robert. You know, he's from Washington, and this is going home for him. You know, I think it's a little bit like when I got the chance to work for the Globe.
Right.
It's just that sort of I think certain publications and certain people carry a little extra weight. It certainly was that way for Robert. And the role that he's going to be in is just perfect for him. So I'm really sad to see him go. And I know it wasn't an easy choice for him to make, but I'm really, really excited to see the work that he's going to do there.
You know, Albert, before we get to the Browns, Robert wrote this a piece on Kellen Winslow Jr., which was a long-form read, which was fantastic and well-sourced and documented. I mean, can you believe that story with Kellen Winslow Jr.
And
how far he's fallen and how sick he is?
It's crazy, man. Like I had it's funny, too, how it crosses over. You know, like my wife doesn't, but she follows football, very, very, very casually. And she sent me a text earlier today, and she said, and it was, who is Kellen Winslow? And I just responded to her. I'm like, I don't think I can answer that in the text. It really is crazy. Like, you think back to what he was, and you played against him in that great national championship game, Dustin.
Tackled him, face masked him.
Yeah, and what a prodigy he was.
Yeah, he was
back then. You know, like, and the sort of hope he brought to the Browns when he went there, and you'd always heard like this guy's a little off and a little weird, but I don't think you ever expect that it's going to be, you know, quite like this. So it's a sad story in a lot of different ways.
Sad for the victims. That's
No,
I don't care about him. He's a piece of garbage.
Yeah.
All right, Albert, on a much lighter note, let's talk about the awful Browns. You know, Albert, it's interesting to me because, you know, part of me just says, well, listen, the coach is really bad. They made a bad choice, obviously. We had Dan Orlovsky on before, and I said, can you coach a team worse in 8 games? He said no. But then I wonder, is it something more, Albert? Is there something? I don't believe in jinxes and curses and all this stupid stuff, but I do believe in bad management, and Jimmy Haslam, until proven otherwise, is a bad owner. And we've seen consistently him make bad decisions, him show bad leadership, him show a lack of caring about character, maybe even a lack of character personally. I wonder if it's a bigger issue that's not as easy to solve overnight.
Well, I would say the one consistent problem, and let's take, you know, the individual players and the individual coaches out of it, okay? And, you know, there have been obviously a lot of quarterbacks there, a lot of coaches go through there over the last, 8 years now that he's on the team?
Yes.
The one thing that's consistent, and the one thing that's been a consistent issue, no matter who's in charge, no matter who's in the field, has been they seem to have this tendency to put people who don't fit together. And that is usually what winds up being the root problem when you get to the end of it, right?
Yes.
And so we saw that with Mike Pettine and Ray Farmer. We saw that with Sashi Brown and Hugh Jackson. I think we're seeing a little bit of that on the coaching staff, where there are a lot of great coaches on that staff, but are they all aligned? And do they all have the same idea of what's going to win every Sunday? You know, I look at it and it's like, this is more than just getting good people in your building. And I think the Pitt Browns do have some good people in the building right now. It's getting people who can work together. It's understanding the chemistry that it's going to take to win. It's understanding how everything has to fit together. And, you know, I think Jimmy Haslam's very well intentioned. But this has been a pretty consistent problem where, you know, really this is about finding people who can work together at a very high level. And that's the one thing that we have seen that hasn't happened there. and whether, you know, it was, I mean, it goes back further than I was even, you know, like Joe Banner and Mike Lombardi and Rob Jasinski, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, they've consistently put together people, and those people and those combinations of people have consistently blown up. And I think at the end of the day, when you look at it, what's the one constant? The one constant that's the one guy that's been there the whole time is Jimmy Haslam. And if he's not the one putting the people together, then he's got to identify where the problem is with whoever has been putting the people together. You know, it's just, it's to me, it's like, it's the one thing that no matter how good the people in your building are, if they can't work together, none of that matters. And it seems like it's been a consistent problem all along. And if you want to know why the Browns have looked consistently, you know, dysfunctional over the balance of this decade, I would say that's the number one reason why, because it's the most consistent reason that seems to show up at every turn.
And that's my concern. You know, the Haslams have been very, very impatient with coaches, and until Hugh Jackson, and they gave him, you know, an extra year after 1-31, but you know, with this team, the expectations, I guess my question is, you know, they say they're going to give them the entire season. Maybe they will. But to me, that's hard to believe. Let's say the Browns lose the next two games. What if they're 2-8?
Yeah.
After a Thursday night loss to Pittsburgh? And I don't know that that's necessarily going to happen. I do think the Browns will win at least one of these next couple of games. But they tend to overreact. And you can't put anything past them. I mean, they've been, you know, quick with the trigger finger and firing people for, you know, many, many seasons.
Right.
I wouldn't put anything past him is what I guess my point, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think the one that is certain is if it keeps going this way, you can't roll it back this way next year. No matter who you're getting rid of, you can't bring back the whole group the way it's constituted, because I think at that point, you're probably asking for more issues, just like the ones you've already got. You know, I think it's my concern right now, if I were Jimmy Haslam, would be the amount of young players you've got in that building and what you might do to their development if things really take a wrong turn here. And not that they haven't already been bad, but, you know, if there starts to be finger pointing, if there starts to be, and you guys have seen this up close plenty of times, if things start to get toxic, is that going to affect the development of young players? Is that going to affect the way Baker Mayfield develops as a leader? Is that going to affect Denzel Ward and Nick Chubb and you know, all these promising young players that they brought into the building, Miles Garrett, all these promising young guys they brought into the building over the last couple of years? Because that's the most important thing. You know, I mean, I think we can safely assume right now they're not making the playoffs in 2019. And so, you know, I think most of your energy and your resources have to be pointed towards 2020. And to me, it's like the number one thing is, how are those young players being nurtured, and how are you putting those young players in a position where they're going to hit the ground running in January and be ready to build momentum towards next season? If that's compromised, then you have to make changes immediately. Like, and I've always said that, like, I think that's why they had to do what they had to do last year. You know, beyond just the thing not looking very good at all early last year, you know, the infighting in the coaching staff, like, you couldn't let your young players be around that, you know? And I don't know if it gets to that point with this group, but if it does, I think that that's where you are forced to make changes. Otherwise, you just got to monitor their development very, very closely. And if you see young guys, you know, starting to either just stop progressing or go in the wrong way and start regressing, you know, that's where, you know, I think you have to look at it. That would be another spot where you'd have to look at making a change.
Albert, just to follow up on what you said about putting people together who don't fit, and you're 100% right. We've seen it all the time. Is there any thought that maybe John Dorsey didn't have as much a say in hiring Freddie as we thought, or that has Todd Monken essentially been forced on Freddie? Is that it?
I would tell you that, like, I think the whole assembly of the coaching staff was sort of a group effort. And I mean, look, like, I think Freddie, and I've talked to Freddie about this. I think, like, he thought he had a great coaching staff in the spring. You know, if you don't have background with people, sometimes, you know, trouble hits and it's harder to find answers. And, you know, I think one thing that you see, and like, look, like the team that I've been around, right, you know, that's had the most success is New England. And you see what Bill does is he promotes from within. The guys who are working for him are guys who came up underneath him and who know a certain way to do it. And, you know, like you look at the top assistants that he has there right now after they made all these changes last year, right? They lost half their coaching staff in the offseason.
Right.
Who's running the show? It's Josh McDaniels, who's been there for 20 years. It's Gerard Mayo, who played for 8 years for Belichick. It's Steve Belichick, who's his son. It's Joe Judge,
right,
who came up in that system. It's all these guys who understand everything about the way that things are supposed to work, and it's seamless. Go to Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco. There was a ton of pressure for him to fire Robert Saleh after last year. But Robert Saleh is a guy he trusts, a guy he knows, a guy who understands what Kyle Shanahan's looking for. And then look on the offensive side of the ball. Mike LaFleur's been, you know, working with Kyle for over a decade. Mike McDaniel grew up with Kyle.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a mistake that a lot – and you see the same thing with Sean McVay in L.A. I don't think it's a mistake that – teams that win have a lot of coaches who have a lot of experience working together. Doesn't mean you can't bring in guys with different voices from the outside, but, you know, when the whole coaching staff is sort of kind of patched together in a certain way, and guys don't have experience working with one another or don't have knowledge of one another, they have to learn on the fly. When the you-know-what hits the fan, it becomes that much harder to fix it. I'd even take, like, McVay as an example. And I think you would look at the one guy he brought in from the outside that he didn't really know as well when he got his shot. That was Wade Phillips. And he deserves a ton of credit for bringing in somebody like Wade, who is much older and more experienced than him, you know, to sort of be somebody to lean on. Well, you know, what people didn't pay attention to was that Sean had actually worked with Wade's son, Wes, in Washington. Mm, and those two were very close. And so there was a relationship there.
Yeah. Amazing.
I think that stuff counts, guys.
Yeah,
I really
do.
Because when you have situations that the Browns have faced over the last few weeks, if you have relationships with these people and they know you and they know the way the program is supposed to be run, then, you know, like to me, it's like you've got so much going back on. If you're just getting to know a guy, and it doesn't mean any of these guys aren't good coaches, but if you're just getting to know a guy, and you have a chaotic situation you have to deal with, you might have three different ways that people want to deal with it, and that can be a problem.
Yeah, relationships and trust and comfort, you know, more loyalty. Albert, you know, I think what we've learned more and more each year is that you never know for sure if a head coach is going to be good. You think he's going to be good. Even if a guy has been a head coach, you never know for sure, different situation. You know, Josh McDaniels seems like he might be a good choice for the Browns next year. I don't know if he's going to end up being the coach or not, but here's what I'm concerned about, because – a lot. This has been alluded to a lot, and I want your take on it because you would know better than most. Is John Dorsey not going to hire a guy like McDaniels who may want more power? Now, I think the coach should be the coach and the GM should be the GM, but obviously McDaniels comes in with more of a pedigree than Freddie. Would that be an issue?
So I'll give you guys some background here.
Okay.
And I don't know how much has been out there, but you know, you guys know Ballard, Chris Ballard, the GM in Indy, and John Dorsey are obviously very close.
Yes.
You know, my understanding of what happened in Indianapolis was like it wasn't over control over players, right? It was like, this is how we're going to set up the weight room. This is how we're going to set up the strength and conditioning staff. This is how like the off season is going to work. This is like how our training staff is going to work. This is the reporting structure here and here and here, and. You know, in the end, I think between Chris and Josh, it sort of came down to more like Chris was from a background where general managers set the agenda. And Josh came from New England where the coach sets the agenda.
Right.
So they had different ideas of how the whole thing was going to work. And, you know, in the end, it wound up being, well, you know, do we compromise or is this just not going to work because we have different ideas of how X, Y, and Z are going to work. And that stuff counts, too. And so, you know, I think if John Dorsey went to Chris Ballard, I think one of the things that Chris would tell him would be, you guys better have an idea of how all that stuff's going to work, because otherwise it's going to be a problem. Because, you know, just like Chris Ballard, John Dorsey has a strong idea of how things should work. And so, you know, to me, it's like, is John Dorsey willing to give the keys to the castle to Josh McDaniels? Like, that's where that would work, is if, all right, like, and it doesn't mean Josh is going to be picking players, but But it does mean that, you know, on a lot of different levels, the program is going to be set up in a certain way, and it's going to flow a certain way that's going to work for the head coach. And I don't think without that you're going to – I don't – as much as I think Josh McDaniels would love to coach in Cleveland and as much as I think he'd love to coach Baker, I think that part of it has to be right. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and I think the coach should make those decisions, in my opinion.
Yeah, and listen, I think Josh would be freaking fantastic for Baker. Like, I think he would be great for Baker. And I think the idea
tough love, Albert.
Yeah, and I think the idea of bringing in somebody who's coached Brady.
Yes,
right. Like,
yes,
like,
good point.
Like, hey, listen, Baker, I coached Tom Brady, like, and he took hard coaching, and I think Baker would have to respect that. You know, I do think something like. And again, we're getting way ahead of ourselves with this, but that would be something that I think, like, at least on paper, if you looked at it, if you could work out the logistical stuff, like, this is what the program's going to look like. And if John was willing to give a little bit, like, I do think that there could be something there. It's complicated. Like, a lot of these things get complicated by power. And the one thing that I will give Josh credit for is I think he knows that – I think Josh knows that wherever he goes – next, right, wherever he takes a shot to be a head coach. I think he doesn't want to be head coach again, but I think what would be important to him would be that you have all this stuff worked out way ahead of time, and it's not a problem when you get there, because he knows as well as anybody, because what he went through in Denver, what happens when that stuff isn't right, and how quickly things can come apart. And the funny thing is, we're talking about Cleveland here. The stuff he's worried about is exactly what the Browns have been dealing with for the last 10 years.
Right. Albert, great insight as always, man. Thank you.
Thanks, Bert.
All right, thanks, guys.
Buckeyes.
Yeah.
Number one, right?
Number one, baby.
What did you think of the rankings? You think I thought Penn State belonged over Clemson. You agree with that?
Yeah, I think if you take this year in a vacuum, I mean, I'd probably be pissed off if my school won 25 in a row and all of a sudden they're out of the playoff picture. But I, you know what? Like, this stuff's just for entertainment anyway.
Yeah.
If Clemson wins out, they're going to be in.
Yeah, they will.
I mean, like that. It's not like they're going to get left out, because LSU or Alabama is going to lose, and Ohio State or Penn State is going to lose. All that stuff's going to work itself out.
And Penn State's going to lose to Minnesota this week. You heard it here first.
No, they're not.
About it.
Do you think so?
No, I'm telling
you.
No, Bull's out of his
trust
mind.
Trust me, I'm on a roll with my picks, Albert. Trust me.
Oh, come on.
You're on that boat, huh?
Listen to him on NFL, not college.
I said the Ravens were going to beat the Patriots.
Yeah, this is pro. Yeah. I gave you credit for the pro.
I'll tell you what, they beat Penn State. That boat might be a little straight to Ann Arbor.
That's right. All right, Albert. Yeah, thanks, Albert.
See you, man.
Albert Breer, Monday morning quarterback.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.